Welcome to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey. I'm the pastor of Hope Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Grays Lake, Illinois. Recording once again from the Happy Castle in Mount Eagle, Tennessee. And we're working around the table again. I want to introduce to you first Jared Oliphant, who is the senior alumni officer at Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia. Welcome back, Jared.
Thanks, Cameron. Good to be back.
Yes, we're very pleased to welcome to the table our friend David Filson, who is a teaching pastor at Christ Presbyterian Church in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome, David. It's good to have you.
Thanks. Welcome to Tennessee.
Yeah, thank you.
Good
Thanks
to be
for
here.
Setting things up. So we're able to come and have this great retreat conversation and do some great work and also record some episodes while we're down here. We're also going to welcome to the table, he's walking over at this very moment, our friend Jonathan Brack, who is the Director of Admissions at Westminster Theological Seminary, just in time sitting at the microphone. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Hey, good to be here.
You all loaded up on your coffee?
We're all coffeed up here.
Okay.
Coffee.
Well, today we're going to speak about workflows and about academic research and writing and all sorts of those types of things. It's not directly a theological topic per se, but once in a while we like to have kind of like a pastor's toolkit or even a scholar's toolkit and discuss our various workflows and tips and tricks that we use in terms of writing and organizing and getting our work done in whatever format that may be. We had an episode on that. I think it was Jim Cassidy and Jeff Waddington and I, and we were talking about a lot of things like that, and it got us into the weeds at some point, but we had an overwhelming response to that episode, and so we'd like to take the opportunity once again to talk about things like that. But before we do so, I want to mention that Christ the Center is listener-supported, and as we do most weeks, I want to remind you about our website at reformedforum.org/donate. If you visit that site, you can pledge your support and help us to produce and distribute all of our programs free of charge. We love sitting down, recording, and distributing all this content and getting it around the world. Just got some feedback from some folks in the UK today, so there's always people listening and people around the world listening to these programs. It's really astounding and it's humbling. But we need your help in order to be able to do this. We love volunteering, but still there are great expenses, and we would like to do even more. But if you visit us online at reformedforum.org/donate, you can help us out. We want to thank everybody for their support of Reformed Forum in this particular program, Christ the Center. So earlier this morning, Jared and I were talking about writing and the process of writing a dissertation or even just papers, and that got us into all different conversations about workflows. Jared, maybe I'll just we can repristinate our conversation just a little bit. But what are some things that you're using, or some things that you think about when you're working on a project, whether that's a course or student prospectus, whether it's an application to a program, or whether it's an academic paper, or even a large project like a book or a manuscript?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of the goals, whatever you're trying to produce, all those things that you mentioned, one of the primary ones is time saving, so that you don't have to repeatedly do a number of tasks in your word processing or whatever, mm-hmm. And also eliminating maybe some of the programming mess that, say, like Microsoft Word causes. With that in mind, a number of years ago, I was turned on to a processor, a word processor, different from Word, because I got so frustrated at all the automatic things that Microsoft Word did that I didn't want it to do, and then I couldn't erase it and those kinds of things. So what I use a lot is, it's called Nisus or Nisus Writer Pro, mm-hmm. and it's a relatively inexpensive program, and it doesn't do all those things that Word does automatically, which if you're writing a lot, chances are you probably don't want to do that, and you want to format it a different way, maybe either in the beginning or in the end, and not have it do all those things for you. So that's one of the things that I use. That's just a downloadable program. But the other thing that I do that saves time potentially is, a lot of the times I'll write in Evernote. Like if I'm writing a paper or something, I'll put it in Evernote, because Evernote, if you're on a Wi-Fi network, syncs about every 5 minutes or whatever. So you know that you will never, ever lose that. Whatever you're writing, it's always going to be saved. So even if your computer blows up at that instant, well, you can just pull it up on your iPad or whatever later. or on a different machine with the same program. So those are a couple ways that I try to both protect what I'm writing and make it a little bit cleaner from the get-go.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said there. What do you write in normally, David? What's your go-to?
I write in Word. And Jared's right. I mean, there's some automatic things that happen. I guess I get used to it. I'm not familiar with that particular program. I've never used that. But I think time saving is an important thing. And one thing that I've always seen for time saving is if you have digital works, legitimate digital works, not like abridged things or whatever, of certain figures that you're studying, especially if you're doing things in historical theology and you're quoting a lot of a particular source, Calvin or Owen or Edwards or whomever, doing searches on themes, words, etc. in their corpus and highlighting those quotations, full context and everything, and I'll create kind of a working quotation sheet, especially if I'm familiar already with, say, the Institutes. I have a fairly decent familiarity there, or the works of Edwards or Owen or whatever, and know that I'm not sort of extracting quotations and I'm going to use them out of context. And I'll create a working sheet of quotations that can be kind of like a sort of a repository of those things that I can go back and insert in the flow of what I'm trying to do, the flow of thought that I'm creating for a project. That's always been a big time saver for me, as well as any time that that I footnote something, I go ahead and create the bibliographic entry for it, because you get to writing and you're footnoting and you think, well, I'll just do the bibliography at the end. I don't know. If you can discipline yourself to do that as you're going, that's a great thing.
Do you use a program, a bibliographic manager?
No, I do it all old school.
David.
Yes, I do.
We're going to have a session.
Makes me feel existentially in touch with what I am crafting.
Well, it's true.
It's
there. You do get to know.
How'd you like that?
You do get to know the citations much better and the data, but I use a program called Zotero, and that started off really as kind of a Firefox extension, but it's a standalone program you can get on Mac for free. Zotero.org, I believe, is a website, and it's open source, I believe, and maintained by a community. But they have a plugin or an extension for Word, and so I keep track of all of my scholarly books in Zotero, and so I'll mark them, and when I'll create an entry, and you'll have the author and the publisher and the date and any bibliographic information. But what's really nice, if you go to a website like worldcat.org or usually any web library website, library online catalog, the extension in Chrome I use, or whatever browser you have, if you have the Zotero extension, it'll bring up a little icon. And so if you're looking at the book on Amazon or in the library catalog or whatever, you just hit the button and it saves all the bibliographic data to Zotero, to your database. And then when you're writing, I'll say, oh, this I'm writing, got my argument going, or I copy I paste in a quotation, or I type in a quotation, then I can create the footnote in Word, and then it brings up a little dialog box and I just search for the book. But it also shows me a list of recently used ones, and I just pick the book that came from and then type in the page number or the range of page numbers, and then it inserts it and it formats it and does everything. All in there correct. Now, the really neat thing is when you're using Zotero or EndNote or other citation managers, let's say, and this has happened many times, I write the dissertation, I've got 300 pages and I've got citations all over the place. You start moving things around and it knows for the first reference to have it the long reference. For all subsequent ones, it automatically changes it to short references, so you don't make sure you don't have a short reference first. It also, if I found, for instance, that there was a stray character in a word, or like a city was wrong, or I was using the old postal code abbreviations for the states and I need to update that to the new ones, all these stylistic things, you just make one change in the source, in the citation manager, and it updates it everywhere.
Wow.
And then you can be confident that all of them are correct. That you don't have to go through, and you should, your final read through, but you can be confident that you're not missing some, you've got ORE period for Oregon instead of OR somewhere or something like yeah. that. You're solid. So that's a huge time saver. And it really doesn't take that much effort even to get the data in, because you can use an extension to even store the data. But of course, you always need to double check that the data in your mm-hmm. system is lines up with the front matter of the book. But that's a huge time saver mm-hmm. tip that for me that was really useful, especially working through a dissertation.
Do you call out quotes, like I was saying, ahead of time and create a quote sheet or some kind of working repository of quotations and passages? And
I'll do that. Often it's kind of a both and. So I might have a structure of an argument and then I keep reading and researching. But so Otero allows you to take notes and put those things in there as well. But usually I'll use Word for that, even though I don't think Word is always the best solution. And there are several other word processors, but in terms of footnotes and citation management, I just haven't been satisfied with the setup on anything except Word and Zotero. I really like Scrivener, if anyone's heard of Scrivener, that. Which mm-hmm. is a really neat word processor that allows for you to write and to organize and manage your writing in a really neat way. So it's almost like a virtual set of note cards that you can write your note or even paragraphs, and you can start moving them around, and you can view the whole thing as one document like Word if you want, but then you can switch to another view where everything's an outline. You can do that in Word too, but then you could switch to a view that looks like a corkboard
mm-hmm. for ideas.
And it's nice to have chunks and to start moving things around. I just haven't found the footnoting. It works, but connecting it to Zotero is not obvious, and neither is it trivial. You might also like, this is pretty hardcore, but the techies out there will probably be familiar with Markdown. And Markdown is a very stripped down form of writing where you're basically writing plain text. It's like it's even simpler than HTML. So basically, there are some very, very basic rules, but it's trying to strip out all the formatting and all this extra crud. So all of your documents would be plain text. So they could be .txts, .mdd, whatever. It's just a plain text file. And the presumption is that 30, 40, 50 years from now, maybe the Word format is not around anymore, like WordPerfect. I mean, it's kind of hard to open.
I used to use that.
Or even if you get it to open, the formatting's all sorts mm-hmm. of screwy. But you could presume it's not guaranteed, but it's a fairly safe bet, I think, that in 20, 30 years, we will still be able to open up a plain text document.
Right.
And since there's no formatting based in there, it's just ASCII characters or Unicode characters, we don't have to worry about the formatting being messed up because there is no formatting. But the way they do the highlights, you know, like an italic, you put stars around the word. Or
okay,
there's, and John Gruber from Daring Fireball kind of created this, and it's a techie thing. So that's pretty hardcore. But if somebody wrote, I'd be fascinated if somebody's out there and they wrote a large project like a dissertation using Markdown, and then maybe did like version control using Git or SVN or something. If such a thing exists, I'd just get a chuckle out of hearing about it. So the people out there that know what I'm talking about are the ones that know what I'm talking about.
Both
so
of them.
If you've never heard of those things, then don't bother. But that would be pretty hilarious. You mentioned constant backups with Evernote.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone else use Dropbox?
I do.
Yeah. Do you write, Jonathan?
Barely.
That's how I stored my academic papers and my dissertation was all in Dropbox. And so every time you'd save it, you know, save a copy to the cloud and you have old versions, so I could pull up old versions if I wanted. So there were times where I had to kind of recover. I mean, I even saved my sermons in Dropbox. And one time for some reason, a sermon got deleted. I don't know how. Something happened. A sermon got deleted on my hard drive, and it was like the day before I needed to deliver it. But
I'm sure you do other external local hard drive backups for these things periodically, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, this one, you know, still could perpetuate.
Right.
So let's say it gets deleted, and then your computer backs up again, unless you're keeping old iterations. If you deleted one of the original, that deletion might perpetuate to your backups as well.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately with Dropbox, I could go in and say, oh, show me all the deleted files, or show me old versions, and I was able to recover. So it's just an extra measure of backup, which is useful. You know, you hear these horror stories of guys losing their dissertation.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, he told me this story where he would like every week or so like print an entire copy of it and like mail it to his mother. So she had this huge stack of like old versions.
Yeah.
Just he was always afraid of like a floppy disk going bad or something.
Oh my goodness.
You know, you mentioned Evernote. The other thing that I use it for is note taking with books.
That's huge.
And I actually used it when we were talking about ecclesiology. I knew the quote from Thomas Peck was somewhere in Evernote. So yes. I could just pull up my phone, the Evernote app, searched Peck, and I went down the list of what I took notes on for an independent study on ecclesiology, and there it was. So the mobility of Evernote is super helpful if you just want to think of whatever, because the search capability is just so nice.
It's like an extra brain. I use Evernote. I pay for the premium now, which is, I think, only $4 a month, but I store everything in there, and I just know that I have it. I mean, I'm like scanning receipts, and I take notes if I'm on the web and I found an interesting article or a quote that I want to use or a story maybe that could be useful someday for a sermon illustration. I just throw it in there and add a couple tags that I know I would be able to use. But even the tags you don't always need because everything's full searchable.
Yeah, that's
right. If I download a theological article, like a full text one from the web or from a database and I want to save it, I dump it in there and then it just becomes searchable.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Another application, you mentioned saving web articles. Part of what I do on a daily basis most of the time is scan through and see what people are writing about and read some articles that are out there on various topics in the theological world. And so I created a main notebook just called Theology, and then it has sub-notebooks under that, like apologetics, biblical studies, biblical theology, church history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah,
that's what I've
and
done.
And there's a Chrome extension. If you use Google Chrome as your web browser, and you're on an article, say you're reading whatever Kevin DeYoung's latest blog, and it's a really good one, you literally do one click on the Evernote icon.
Just click the elephant.
You click the elephant. And it will automatically put it into a notebook for you, and you either confirm or switch it up, save, and boom, you have the simple text of that article saved. And so that goes into your search library. So if you're searching for whatever it is, a really nice article on homosexuality, and you're doing research, that'll be included in what comes up, not only journal articles or whatever else. So I've found that just to be tremendously helpful.
I constantly find that I have a vague recollection of having read something or thought of something.
Yeah.
But if I've been diligent, just dump everything I touch into Evernote, I don't have to worry about it. I'm like, what was that story about that blind man? And I just be like, I'll go to Evernote and be like, blind man. And then, you know, and stuff will pop up. And then I'll say, oh, there it is. You know, there was that podcast episode that I listened to and I bookmarked or something.
I downloaded an ebook the other day on becoming an Evernote power user. So we'll
see.
That's
nice.
We'll see.
Sweet. Yeah.
I'm curious when you say, you know, you're scanning for articles and so forth. Do you have a system or sort of a protocol by which you scan for articles, or you just kind of give it a lick and a promise, whatever you're feeling like that morning?
Yeah, that's a good question. I used to use what was
Google Reader.
I used to use Google Reader, like almost everybody else.
Yeah.
And so when that announcement was made that Google Reader is going away, I was going, well, how am I going to get my basic feeds of trusted sources or just regular websites that I read and use? And almost everyone mentioned Feedly as a good RSS reader. And so what I do is I have different categories within Feedly. I have a philosophy one. I have one called Reformed World, and that's usually where I take the articles from. I have one called just Thinkers, and that's just kind of generic cultural thinkers. But this Reformed World section, I mean, it has all the ones that you'd expect. It has, you know, Reformation 21. It has Desiring God. It has a couple bloggers on TGC. It has Reform Forum, obviously, and a couple of like James Anderson's blog. I'm just going down the list here. Yeah, and a few other ones. So I just scan that and see what people are writing on and just peruse it real quick, and that's the way I do it. And usually if something is important to read, it's going to show up on one of those ones that I've already included. Rarely is this a huge gem that everyone's talking about and doesn't it all
or
show
Twitter.
Up on the stuff. Yeah. Or Twitter. I mean, that's huge.
One kind I do that too. I subscribe to several, but I also I've been more economical and sparing with my RSS subscriptions recently, but I also use Flipboard and Nuzzle, N-U-Z-Z-E-L, which are apps for smartphones or for tablets that you plug in your credentials to Twitter or Facebook, and then it will read. It's really useful for me in Twitter because I've curated the people I follow, and which is a pretty wide-ranging set of interests. And then it almost builds for me, Flipboard builds like a magazine for you based on the links and things that are posted in your Twitter streams. Nuzzle does too, but Nuzzle has this extra feature which allows you to see news and stories from friends of friends, which I'd use that all the time. Mm. Most of the time when I go to Nuzzle and I just do news from friends, I've seen it because I've seen the Twitter stream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm usually pretty good about that,
yeah,
clearing that out. But then the friends of friends is really neat because that expands the view to things that would be of interest to me. Not, you know, not just like the front page of CNN.com. I don't really care. You know, I get that news in other ways,
mm-hmm.
but it, also stuff that I'm not necessarily immediately apprised of. So that's a little trick that the Nuzzle, N-U-Z-Z-E-L, is a little cool little app.
Yeah. And I mean, this is partially on academic resources. And so this sounds non-academic and definitely can be, but you mentioned Twitter, and it's if you use it right, it's a great source
follow the
of
right
information.
People.
Follow the
There's
right
a ton
people.
Of academic stuff going on Twitter.
Yeah, and
not
so
it itself is academic posting, but you will find academics talking about academic stuff.
Right,
and
publishing houses to, like Cambridge Publishing, Oxford Publishing. And I was going to mention, instead of just using the normal maybe Twitter app on your phone or even on a Mac or something like that, I have found that TweetDeck is a very, very powerful program to use these kinds of things, because not only you can customize it, and so that's great, but I'm looking at just my regular feed. I have another bar here that has the activity, so whatever the people that I follow are doing, like favoriting or following other people, that's going to come up in the activity feed. And so if a lot of people are following somebody, I say, okay, so what's going on with this other account that everybody is starting to follow for some reason? So it's just, it keeps you a lot more informed of what people are doing, not only your feed, but also what other people are doing as well.
Yeah,
and you
like
can do search terms.
Yeah. TweetDeck's good.
Yeah, it's good.
Jonathan, how do you get news? Everyone comes to you at Westminster. Literally,
the one that
they walk.
The news.
Jonathan is news.
He is news.
He is news.
The
news.
But his office, I mean, is like this, the hub, this, the center of all the spokes, the traffic. I mean, I don't know how you get anything done because there's just always people walking
it's
in and
the
out.
The water cooler admissions office.
Yeah, most of my news comes it's basically just reactionary people telling me about it, and then I go and search it out and look for it.
Yeah.
There's barely any time to basically do social media. I try to do the Van Til Twitter handle, but
yeah, Case Van Til.
And when I do, when I have like 30 minutes, I'll go and look up like five or six quotes and tweet deck it, and then I'll come back to it next month. because that's all the time I have to really do anything. And the main reason I got that was that sort of faux Vantillian stole the handle. I was like, we got to make sure that somebody gets it that believes in Van Til as far as his program. Mm. But anyways, as far as writing, I will use Google Docs.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah. And just because it's always in the cloud, it's immediate and I can pick up where I left off. I can see the history.
How do you handle footnotes and citations?
Well, you can do things. You can do footnotes and citations. There's ways to plug in Zotero. And so, it doesn't have a Zotero plugin, but there's ways that you can copy and paste as far as, your Zotero bibliography. I haven't necessarily used that because I've done Zotero, but I haven't really built up my library.
Mm-hmm.
But I researched it and it works, just as far as copy and paste. For the most part, just continuing to have, just writing. Like, so for my last couple of papers that I've done for PhD level classes have all been Google Doc, just writing in them.
Now, for those of you who use Word, Google Docs, I think, has some features like this, but do you use the style feature? You know what that is?
Mm-hmm.
Do you use it?
I don't.
Oh, brother.
I know. This is
good. With Jared
explain
and I,
what yes. you're explaining to me, because this is a huge time saver for people who are in similar situations.
It was massive. Now, let me give you a use case. Now, let's say you write an entire dissertation, and you submit it to the librarian, who's going to check the styles. Librarian says, no, you got your headings wrong. These shouldn't be bolded. They should be underlined in regular print. What do you do? Well, you'd have to, normally a lot of people would go through and go to each reference and then highlight the heading and then go up and click the bold button and then click the underline button.
Right.
Don't do that. When you're writing a document, what you should do is use the styles panel in Word, and every word processor will have, any modern word processor should have this unless it's intentionally stripped down. And you usually find it on one of the panels or the ribbon on Word, and you'll see things like heading one, heading two, heading three, paragraph, quotes or whatever. Highlight your type out your heading, highlight it, and then click, if it's heading one, click heading one, and it applies heading one to that line. That becomes its style. And now it knows. And then you could write your whole document. You have heading one, heading two, heading three. You have paragraphs, footnotes. There are styles for all of these things built in. And now you go in and you just right click or control click the heading or the style. And that's where you can change things. You say, well, I want to change the font size. I want to change the spacing, want to change the actual font or the color or the underlining or whether it's bold, you do that in the style. And when you change it once in the style, it changes everywhere instantly throughout the entire document. So when you're working, especially on a 300-page document, you want to make sure all your formatting is solid and it's correct and you only have to mess with it in one place. So I spent weeks, but I finally got my template according to spec, according to the style book spec, but then that was that. So I had a table of contents, and that was connected to all my headings. So I would change the heading, the table of contents would automatically update. Mm-hmm. And there were styles for everything, my line spacing, paragraph indentations, ligatures, all sorts of crazy stuff. And it was all in a style and easily updatable and changeable. So instantly, if I want to make my whole document, you know, look different, I can just hit one button.
Comic Sans
style.
Yeah.
I think that's helpful because, you know, it's such a, as you were saying in the beginning, Jared, it's such a time saver to research all the different shortcuts and tools that you can use.
Yeah, exactly.
But I would say that at the end of the day, what needs to happen is, you know, to be a good, thoughtful writer is to basically meditate on what it is that you're writing.
And do the work.
And so sometimes what I'll, do the work, be disciplined. So sometimes what I'll do is I will, like, I'm so ready.
Yeah.
It's like the kid who's got like everything ready to go to kindergarten. It's like every single, you know, type of crayon and notebook. And, but he doesn't know, you know, how to learn anything in class. So, but it's what I do when I come across a quote that it's just like, man, this is absolutely penetrating quote for what I'm, you know, reading. What I'll do is I'll write the quote down, you know, type it down. I used to do that in Evernote, but Evernote was crashing my computer too much. So I just said, forget this. Yeah. So, but anyways, I'll type it out. And then instead of going back to the book and just continuing on, I'll sit there and I'll read it. And then I'll write, you know, two or three sentences about it. Because you forget, why did I put this quote in here?
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, I used to, when I was first using Evernote, I just had all these quotes. And I was just like, what? No, that's significant for some reason. Why is that significant? And so in other words, I think just getting into the discipline of not only, you know, unearthing really good gems as far as quotes and just writing them down and getting into the habit of that, but also write right there on the spot what you think is important and why it's important.
Well, can I ask both of you then, because I have not compiled quotes outside of taking notes on a book, you know, for a paper or whatever, for just reading in general. What is your categorization system for quotes? Because the reason that I've hesitated to do it is that it seems like for me it would make reading five times longer. My production of actual reading, it seems to me, would just drop so much. So I know there's a balance, but how do you go about, that's two questions, I guess. How do you go about categorizing things? And have you found that it actually does maybe save time or is worth the production in the long run?
Yeah, I would say I'm thinking not just in terms of academic writing, but blogging as well as sermon production. I mean, you know, as you're reading, you're thinking, oh, that's going to be a great quotation to use for this sermon I have coming up in a couple of weeks. Or you read a quotation, you think, I think I could milk that into a whole blog post, just the themes that are in that passage or whatever. So it's for all those things. So I separate them out in terms of how they're going to function, what kind of thing I'm writing.
Mm.
Or if it's just something I'm going to, I find quotations that I want to keep a list of so that I can tweet them out or schedule them for tweeting or whatever.
Right.
Then just, you know, according to the categories of theology, I'll separate things out if it seems more soteriologically significant or eschatologically or, you know, whatever. But it dawns on me as we're talking about all this that maybe, and y'all will forgive me, I hope, that really the pioneer of all of this, especially this Evernote note-taking, quotation-keeping kind of thing, was Jonathan Edwards himself, right? Mm-hmm. With his little scraps of paper that he'd make notes on, he'd keep them in notebooks, he'd file them in. And if you've seen the picture of his cabinet, he had this writing desk with various cabinets and doors and drawers, and he would keep these notebooks with scraps of paper and quotations that things he would read or things that would come to his mind that he didn't want to forget. He was fastidious. So he probably would have been a big fan of Evernote. Come think of it.
Or we could think of Newton too, you know, Newton's mm-hmm. journal and mm-hmm. letters and everything. Yeah.
I would say, though, to your question, what I usually do is the first time I pick up a book that I think is going to be very, very important for whatever it is that I'm writing or working on, the first thing I will do is I will give it a complete read with no note taking. I will just sit there and consume it. And hopefully with, you know, in tactile format. So that it's not just on a computer screen.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So what I normally do is just take the time to just read it and think about it. Maybe have, if it's in a printed, you know, PDF or journal entry, that you have a pen to underline a few things or star, but you just read through it instead of, reading and, oh, that's a good quote. And then you,
mm-hmm. Start, stop.
Yeah. So I'll do that. And then, after I do that, then I'll come back to it and say, okay, now I need to think about, because this whole thing could possibly be quotable.
Right, exactly.
Once you get the whole argument down, it's almost like, what sections of Bovink do I highlight?
So the entire thing. Yeah.
But then you think, okay.
A guy that would read, and we'd make fun of him at Bible study because he highlighted so much. I'm not exaggerating.
No,
every word would be highlighted in like a chapter in some different colors. He highlighted so much that the highlights became absolutely meaningless, and he started stapling pages that he liked because the highlights were every word. So the pages or the passages that really stuck out, he'd put a staple into it. But then his books wouldn't close because there were so many staples in them. They would be, you know, imagine that many staples
this
in the
edge.
This is
the most counterproductive reading I have ever heard about.
This guy read in his entire life, he read 3 books.
I know, seriously.
Just because it took so much time. No. Yeah.
Man, he wanted to save it, but it's like.
One was Goodnight Moon.
Yeah. That's right. But sometimes when you read, and I notice this maybe because I'm a slower reader, or I just have to be really careful when I read because maybe I skim too much because of the generation that I'm in. But when I read, I try to get the full argument down and then go back to it and then read it really, really precisely. And it's mm-hmm. at that time that I'm already going slow that I'll pull out something and take the time to pick up my eyes and go over to my computer and type it out.
Mm. That's almost a relief for me to hear because I've just on my own organically come to that basically same method because I found that I read something for different purposes. Like you said, I can read something to get the overall structure. Then I can read something to get into the weeds and the flow of argument, things like that. So that's nice because I'm with you. Maybe I think I might be on the slower side of reading. I'm not sure, but I've just that by necessity I've had to do. And, you know, I've had a little bit of guilt doing that because I'm like, no, I should get this in one shot, but mm-hmm. it's just not how I really process reading information right now.
Yeah, me neither. I couldn't do it. I would be too choppy as far as just reading. Oh, I got to write that down.
Yeah.
And then get back to it, read. Oh, I got to write that down. I'd be so slow. Plus, I don't think I would have a better comprehension of the whole. When I was taking that class on Pannenberg, there would have been no way, unless I've actually just stayed with his argument, because he is so difficult to comprehend unless you just keep in his train of thought. And then after that, you're like, oh, I see what the arguments he's making at this transition.
Yeah. Out, so. David, are you an active reader? How do you work when you're reading? What do you do? Do you mark up your books?
I underline. I underline.
Staples?
Yes, actually.
Do you hot glue pages to each other?
I actually bedazzle. Bedazzle pages that I really want to.
I wish you would do that. Oh, that's
my daughter brilliant. Lydia, though, she would do that.
Yeah. That's so great.
I underline.
Imagine if Van Til did that, all of his books,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
going to
yeah.
his library. It's like, well, we were looking at the Dutch version of Bavinck, and he bedazzled this section.
He
what's
yeah.
all this rubber cement doing in the yes. white elephant of Bart's Dogmatics?
I'll call my dissertation Bedazzling Buzzwell. Buzzwell bedazzled.
Your third reader is, I don't know who, Martha Stewart? Rachel Ray.
You're right. Yeah. No, I underline as I go, and then... I keep a couple of different journals. Of course, we've yeah. talked about our mm-hmm. our proclivities toward all things fountain pen and yeah. ink and paper and
kindred
so forth.
Souls, kindred yeah. spirits.
So I'll write in my journals. Certain journals I have that are uniquely devoted, say, to one theologian. Mm-hmm. I keep those handy, but then I'll also enter things as well. If I'm working on a particular project, like a paper, article, or whatever, that's when I create. Basically just a file, you know, just a folder, and I'll have a working sheet for myself, and it'll be full of notes to myself, crazy, that you probably wouldn't make sense of if you read them, but they're actually me giving directions to myself, what I'm going to do next, where I'm going to go next.
Smart.
Yeah, and in the context of that, I'll also have quotations or passages from books that I want to include in that. I don't do what you're saying, where you do a full read straight through and then go back and highlight. I tend to just do it as I go. Maybe I should try that. But one of the things that I do, I underline, y'all might be surprised. I underline very neatly. I use a ruler to underline.
Yeah, I'll do that. Not always.
Because
yeah.
I can't draw a straight line and it just looks bad. So, I underline.
That looks better. Yeah. I always admire people who do that. Mine are horrible.
Yeah. And then depending on the book that I'm reading, it speaks to me what color pen I will use. There's just this, like some books underlined with purple, some with green, some with red. I just have to feel it as I pick the book up and the book speaks to me and says, I'm a book that needs to be underlined in purple. So I'll just underline it. Yeah.
So what's a pink book for you? I'm curious. Is there a
Rob Bell?
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, really. Let's go through authors and ask him what color.
Yeah.
Zimzum yeah. pink. So what'd you use for the institutes? Do you remember?
Oh, yes, I definitely remember. The institutes are green.
Mm.
Green throughout. I don't know what it is. It just, when I think of Calvin, I think of the institutes. And I think of the Ford Lewis Battles edition, it just, I don't know. It's just green.
Green. You know, somewhat related, as far as
you might have synesthesia.
I love that.
I may. It's quite possible. Think,
yeah. As far as bibliographic information, this is another like computer program resource, but and we talked about similar programs before, but just wanted to recommend Bookends as a program, and that stores all the information of any book that you put in there. And it does two things really well. One, you can import your Logos library into it. And so that's huge if you have a Logos library. And we could talk about, we have done a whole episode on Logos, and so that's an enormously helpful resource.
Yeah.
But the other thing that it does is if you're looking for a book that maybe like you're reading it and you don't know some of the bibliographic information, or you're wanting to research something and you don't have a copy, whatever it is, it searches Amazon for you and imports the data. So you can just search. It has like literally an Amazon bar. You put in the title or the author, however it does the best search, and it'll show you what the book on Amazon. Maybe it has different printings or whatever. So it's very, I mean, it has old versions, a lot of things. And then whatever the information is on the one that you click, it just imports it right over to that. So it's a huge time saver again. especially for like older works too. So recommend the program Bookends for archival bibliographic information.
David, one thing that we were talking about last night was Van Til's books and his marginalia. What would you say, you know, that, and there, I've had some exposure and some experience to some of the books from his library and seen how he does this, but how would you describe his process and what kinds of things did you find in the marginalia for Van Til?
Yeah. Well, first of all, this I have discovered, he never used a ruler when he underlined.
No, yeah, he was no. kind of...
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness, yeah.
Use a compass. It was
exactly.
Curves.
obviously, the work that I've been doing with him and Buswell, he is reacting much the way you would imagine Calvin and Servetus may have done. You know, you see Calvin when he in the Institutes, and he's talking about his interaction with Servetus. It's very... it's almost like an ongoing conversation happening. And I think that's the same thing with Van Til and Buswell. For instance, there's a place in Buswell's Systematic Theology where he talks about the greatest Reformed theologian ever, B.B. Warfield, who obviously is one of the greatest Reformed theologians ever. But Van Til writes almost sort of like, you know, a little mini manifesto. Obviously, he's never heard of Bavinck. And
interesting.
So it's this ongoing kind of conversation going on. And then the other thing that I noticed Van Til does in his marginalia is he asks questions.
Yep.
Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah.
He asks questions, or he'll maybe two or three words with a question mark, maybe one word with a question mark, or something fuller, or more fully formed sentence. But he asks questions, and you can get the sense of the dialogue that's taking place between him and the text.
When I saw Van Til's copy of Church Dogmatics for the first time and saw him do the marginalia, I noticed that he was underlining and he was asking these one word or two word questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally stole that. So all my books that I have, I will underline. And then if something's confusing or if there's something I need to challenge, I will just say it in one word with a question mark. And it helps because when I go back to it, it's, you know, like, free will question mark or bishop is not equal to presbyteros question mark. You know, so I just remember, oh, that's why I have to ask that question right here. And I straight up stole that from Van Til just by looking at the dogmatics.
Yeah, it's a record of your interaction with the book, but it's a good way to be an active reader rather than a passive reader. Mm-hmm. And that's what's different about reading versus watching television, for instance, because overall, the medium of television, for example, is passive. It's you sit, you receive. Reading a book properly should be an active medium and an active participation where you are interacting.
Yeah.
In a sense, you're not sitting with the author, but you're sitting with his work and should be asking questions, prompting questions. And then if you're able to mark up your book and write in the marginalia or even just flag notes or little post-its throughout, then that is good. And it's only going to enhance your reading and make you a better reader. And it'll make you remember things better too.
And not just make you a better reader, better in terms of research. I have a sizable library, and so I can't do this with every book that I have, as I'm sure y'all do as well. But there are certain books that I want my children to, after the Lord has taken me, I want them to have and to take off the shelf and say, this book must have really meant something to Daddy. Look at how he interacted. Look at the way that he wrote and asked questions and responded and so forth. I'm working on a journaling Bible for them. It's just one Bible that it's going to be theirs. And basically I'm writing a little mini commentary on every verse, every passage that I read, the whole Bible. It's a Read Through the Bible in 2 years program. And these are not overly technical commentaries, but they're basically me seeking to preach that passage to them. And I write prayers to them based on that passage so that they will have my reflections on the whole Bible for them as their daddy, handwritten out. And so, I think they would take, from my library, certainly things by Van Til, Owen, Edwards, Calvin, different figures that I think they could say, we have some insight into Daddy's heart and what he was thinking, who he was, mm-hmm. and how these men formed him, how these texts formed him, and he interacted. Because, you know, when you read someone's marginalia, you're not just reading the text. You're getting, I mean, I feel like I know Van Til better, right?
Yeah.
Because of the things he's writing in Buswell's text and so forth.
That's mm-hmm. awesome. Yeah, anytime I have the chance to open up and see Van Til's marginalia there, I think, like, wow, this is so unique, because you get to read, you know, Bart with Van Til over your shoulder.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Or like, pay attention to this right here. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. There's a lot of value there for many, many reasons.
Just one more resource that I might mention. This is actually for digital books, but if you, you know, some people, they enjoy reading, or maybe they have no choice. Maybe they're reading like a book in PDF form on their computer screen. Some people might not know that you can actually read PDFs on a Kindle or on an iPad with the Kindle app. And so if you prefer to maybe have it be mobile, or just, you know, sit on the couch and read something like that, then look at your Amazon account, and it'll tell you an email address that you can just send the PDF to, and that will show up automatically in your Kindle library. So I've done that for maybe longer reads that I don't have to sit there and meticulously take notes or something. I just want another setting to read mm-hmm. something on the porch or whatever it is. So that can be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll do that conversion for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you take a look at the account, and there's some instructions on Amazon on how to set that up. It's not too hard. Well, it's been a fun conversation. I think there's a lot of material here that's fruitful, and hopefully the listeners can glean something of value from what we've been able to share, but we would like to learn and grow from you as well. So we encourage you to get a hold of us. One easy way to do it and to share with everyone is by writing a comment on the episode, just going to the web and where we have this post, by writing your own thoughts in the comment thread. You can also get a hold of us online by sending us an email at mail@reformedforum.org or by tweeting us @reformedforum. We want to thank everybody for listening. We hope you join us again next time. Christ the Center.